Good afternoon, and welcome to the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. It is Wednesday, April the 23rd, 2025. This is program number 1361 of the Lunchroom. I'm your host, Calix George Jr. Now, of course, in addition to 101.1 FM radio, you can also get us at our website, rcistlucia.com, and you can also reach us via our Facebook page. You just have to search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International. Now, the number to call in to tell us what's on your plate today, it is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. And you can also reach us on our WhatsApp number. That is 724-0008. If you want to call in or message in, you just got to call that number, 724-0008. Now, we want to send out some birthday greetings for today, and we want to send them out to twins Georgiana and George Charlemagne. Happy, happy birthday to you, and we do hope that you're having a fantastic birthday celebration. A bit of history for this day, and we'll start it out with going back into the year 1861, where Robert Lee was named commander of Virginia's Confederate forces during the United States Civil War. 1968, on this day, the first decimal coins issued in Great Britain, the 5 and 10 new pence, replaced the shilling and 2 shilling pieces. And in the year 2013, on this day, West Indian cricketer Chris Gayle smashed the fastest century in history, and that was in just 30 balls. We now move on to our dish of the day. The Daily Dish is brought to you the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Tiles Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus. Did all kind of tests. Come down to Tiles Plus. We also got glassware and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down to my nobody. We got the best tiles on island. Trust me. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lakes, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
Welcome back to our program today. And yesterday evening, we saw the Prime Minister of St. Lucia, who is also the Minister for Finance, bring forward his budget proposals to inform government spending of the appropriation bill for the year 2025-2026. And he spoke for about 2.5 hours, sorry, about 2 hours and, sorry, 40 minutes or so, outlining a number of issues. Of course, certainly took the opportunity to give certain jabs at the opposition on many different issues, but also outlined quite a number of policies and new measures to assist in the economic development of the country, and of course in terms of economic livelihoods. In terms of some of the major takeaways in terms of the island's fiscal performance, he did note that the island grew by 4.7%. And that is of GDP, of the gross domestic product. And I think if you look back in time, I think this would probably be the highest growth rate, barring the post-COVID years, where we saw, because of the steep decline in the numbers in 2020, you found that the years 2021, 2022 were very in like measure because of the economic activity returning by way of tourism that had fallen out in 2020. We saw those very steep rises in those 2 years, and we could speak of about a 26% growth. But normally, that hasn't been the case. And in fact, if you don't consider those 3 years between 2020 to 2022, as somewhat of a bit of an anomaly. We kind of back into the range, the general range of growth for most countries around the world, which is really, you know, somewhere around plus or minus 10%, you know. And so, but we haven't actually seen significant growth for a little while, even before COVID. In fact, you would recall, I think in the year 2019, that financial year, we actually saw a decline in our economy. And so if you consider those years, we actually have to go back to about, I think, 2007 or thereabouts, when you might see a comparative increase in the economy thus far. So certainly a pretty strong economic performance of 4.7% for the year 2024. And no doubt the government would probably be saying that they would have even expected an even greater performance had it not been for slowdowns in implementation of various projects. The Prime Minister indicated that, well, all things being considered, we would be growing by 4% in the coming year. Now, he also made the point that this is after adjustments for inflation. And what's he referring to here? There are two ways of calculating GDP. And there's one where you use the current prices of your goods and services. And there's one where you use what is known as a constant price. So you fix the calculation based on prices from a particular reference year. And so normally when GDP figures are quoted with respect to economic growth, they tend to be the constant price GDP figures. And that is effectively adjusting the GDP, taking into account the impact of inflation. Because if you have basically a situation where all prices are increasing, the cost of your goods coming in are increasing, then you would see that, you know, it would be sort of like an inflationary-driven growth situation. But that 4.7% is actually adjusted for inflation. What you call a real GDP figure, as opposed to GDP at current prices. So, for example, last year, in fact, the GDP for current prices was actually higher. It was like about 7%, over 7%. But then adjusted for inflation, that's why it comes down to about 4.7%. So, of course, moving forward, the expectation there is that you would probably see a growth somewhere in the region of 4%. He also made the point that this is, in fact, the fourth year of consecutive year of economic growth. He did make mention of unemployment for 2024 being the lowest on record. And I believe we've been collecting unemployment data from about the 90s in terms of official data coming out of the Statistics Department. So we have never really been this low in terms of unemployment figures. And of course, in the last quarter of 2024, that figure was actually as low as, I think, 8% or in that region. Of course, the 10.6% is an average across the four quarters within a calendar year. And that's how they, in fact, are calculated. But in fact, you might be seeing that you're seeing a drop, which is even more characterized by the last quarter of 2024. Of course, there are some who are arguing out there that, well, this unemployment is as a result of a shrinking of the labor force. And we do have to look at our labor force issues because we certainly do have the matter of persons retiring, the issue of natural attrition. And what we're finding, remember, we've been having this conversation about our population. And what happens now when you have actually more people leaving the labor force than you have joining the labor force. So I'm not sure if we're there yet, but it is something that we have to be mindful of. And some countries are already facing that as their reality. And then, of course, on top of that natural process of persons leaving the labor force, you also have the other issue of migration. That could also be a reason why you're seeing reductions in your labor force. But even that said, though, the labor force has actually pretty much stabilized. I think according to Statistics Department figures from 2022, and if you look at 2024, it's pretty much about the same, which was about 97,000 individuals within the labor force. And against that figure, we have certainly been seeing a rise in the total number of employed people since 2021, which is in fact suggesting that you are seeing a level of job creation. Now, in addition to that, the Prime Minister spoke of the situation regarding the debt. That often has been a very, very controversial matter. And perhaps we're not hearing that much about it anymore. In fact, I think in the year past, there was actually a reduction in the debt-to-GDP ratio. Small reduction, but a reduction nonetheless. And he reported that the debt-to-GDP ratio for 2024 stood at 73.5%. Not quite yet where the institutions like the OECS, ECCB, and others would recommend us being as small island developing states. That recommendation is that ideally you should be about 60% of GDP. And in fact, we were last there when there was that rebasing exercise somewhere around 2016. And at that point, we saw our debt to GDP actually come down considerably. And that was as a result of a rebasing exercise undertaken through the assistance of an agency called CARTAC. And they come in and they do a very detailed analysis of where of your GDP and look at areas which are not being captured. And in fact, in that exercise, when it was last done, they in fact identified a number of areas, particularly that of the real estate sector, that were not being captured within the GDP data. Because remember, at the end of the day, it's an estimate, right? You really are just estimating the size of your economy. And the economist statisticians are looking at various indicators and trying to assess the how productive the economy is. It's only one measure of you know, economic health, but it is one of the most broadly used measures around. Debt, however, is a real figure, right? That's known usually pretty well. It's actually hard dollars that are in fact owed and obligations against the consolidated fund. So it is good to see that, yes, the debt to GDP is looking like it's heading in the right direction. And remember, that's against the basis that you're seeing an expanding economy while the extent of spending, the extent of the increase in the debt has not been growing as fast as the economy. So that's generally a good sign. And where you want to be, that you want to be able to ensure that your debt is not outpacing, your growth in debt is not outpacing your economic growth. So certainly the other indicators, as being mentioned by the Minister for Finance, the matter of the surpluses, and countries want to be in a position where they can pay off all their recurrent expenditure against their recurrent revenue and then still have something left over so that they can also make interest payments on their debt, right? And so in one instance, you have a current revenue, a current surplus or deficit, depending on whether you could be in really bad straits if, in fact, your current spending is less than your current revenue, right? That would be a current deficit. But according to the Prime Minister, we are, in fact, seeing data that is coming out that shows that Kinusha has a current surplus as well. It enjoyed a third consecutive year of having a primary surplus, so that it is actually able to pay its interest rates as well. Now, ideally, you also want to have to be in a position where you could potentially have an overall surplus, right? So that you can have sufficient revenue to be able to put into your capital expenditure and make those types of investments. That's the ideal that a country like Senusha wants to get itself into. Now, of course, he also mentioned that the overall deficit, however, was 1.8% of GDP, which is pretty good. The prudential limit is 3% of GDP. And in fact, that's where we were last year. And he indicated that it actually came down to 1.8%. So again, moving in the right direction in that regard. Of course, in terms of economic expansion, it would appear that the two sectors that were leading the way were that of tourism and construction. And he did mention that there was a significant growth in visitor spend, as well, of course, in line with visitor arrivals, particularly stayover arrivals, being the highest on record. And so that drove up visitor spend, that estimated amount of money that is spent by visitors coming into the country. A lot of it is spent in accommodation, but also in food and beverage, as well as attractions and money spent on entertainment and the like. So $3.6 billion is that estimate of the amount being spent by visitors. Some may say that not all of that is actually being necessarily spent in the economy directly, because in the case of accommodation, some of that money may not necessarily get itself into the banks and the circulation and the space here. Generally speaking, however, there was a point being made as well that there's pretty high money supply in the country, and that the banks are seemingly pretty liquid. As well, mention was made of the Bank of Senusha, in fact, becoming the largest bank on island, sorry, in the region, in the Eastern Caribbean Currency Union. And it, in fact, made a profit of over $100 million in the year gone by. So very positive news coming out of tourism in general and driving a lot of the economic growth. But as well, the construction sector, according to the Prime Minister, grew by 22.4% in the last year. And of course, pointing out that part of that was as a result of government stimulating the sector through the removal of value-added tax on items such as steel, cement, wood, and galvanized. So you're seeing some of that evidence, of course, as in the private consumption, and there was mentioned quite a bit of credits to non-residential construction. That would probably mean industrial and commercial expansions. That grew by nearly doubled, in fact, in the year 2024. Of course, some of the highlights, because we wouldn't have time to go through every single thing within that budget, of course. But in terms of some of the highlights, which we'll probably try to unpack as the program goes on, certainly he gave a list of measures that were going to be implemented by the government in the in the coming year. And some of them were pretty interesting. For example, an assistant to nurses in particular. We've known for some time that we've had major challenges with keeping nurses here in St. Lucia. And the reality is they perhaps can get better pay if they go to the United States or the United Kingdom and maybe some other places in the Cayman Islands, in Bermuda. And so many of them are attracted to those other markets where the compensation is better. And so we are in a situation where we do need more nurses to be on island and working within that healthcare sector. So very, very important. And the Prime Minister announced that there would be two major measures to be able to tackle the matter of nurses. In the first instance, in terms of their training, the indication there that nurses or persons who are attending nursing programs at the Sir Arthur Lewis Community College, they will in fact be seeing significant tuition support. So guaranteed government subsidy towards tuition in the first year and second year, $2,500 tuition support. In the third year, $5,000 tuition support. And the final year, $10,000, effectively full tuition payment in the final year for all nurses attending the Sir Arthur Lewis Community College. And in addition to that, the mention being made that nurses, once they've completed and they've done the necessary training, that they would in fact be entitled to permanent employment. And of course, that has been an issue for many nurses as well, who don't necessarily find spots within the sector. And so, of course, they're being guaranteed those spaces. Also mention was being made in terms of taxes, and the current tax amnesty is again going to be extended by in another year up to May 1st, 2026, and also a pushing up of the period for which the tax amnesty actually can apply. So taxes due up to December 31st, 2023 would benefit from that tax amnesty. Mention also being made for assistance to in the fuel and energy sector. Bakers going to be receiving a rebate on bulk gas purchase, which is usually what the majority of bakers use, diesel, gas, diesel to a small extent, but also gas, and some also use wood. And so some assistance being provided there to bakers. The LPG cooking gas continued to be subsidized, the 20 and 22 pound LPG cooking gas tanks will be continued to be subsidized. And they are also making a mention that effective May 1st, that the price of fuel will not exceed $16 per gallon. And he said that that would be in place for at least up until January the 1st, 2026. A lot of other matters that we're going to mention, but we're going to have to end it here in terms of our dish of the day. And in fact, we will head across to take in our weather report. Of course, that's coming through the St. Lucia Met Services.
This has been The Daily Dish.
Test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test, you fund, double cost. Customer service, A plus, did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also got gas, and vanity. Books, doors, you'll see. Come down to my nobody. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bosses, you, Grozy Lanes, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939.
St. Lucia, create it with Ironstan Bathroom Bonanza. Bundle and save from vanities to toilets, shower sets to vanities. Gear them up, triple them. special introductory offer on toilets starting as low as $240. Island Style Bathroom Bonanza is on at our Castries, Wardney Bay and Viewfort stores. Call or visit us today.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
Of course, on the 1.1, it's now time for your weather report as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Star Talamba. The forecast for St. Lucia Valley for the next 24 hours, winds will be blowing from the east, southeast, and south near 12 miles per hour or 19 kilometers per hour, becoming lighter and variable or calm at times. The weather partly cloudy to cloudy skies with some light to moderate showers. The forecast for the Lesser Antilles, partly cloudy to cloudy skies with scattered light to moderate showers, mainly over the Windward Islands and areas further south. The weather summary, lingering trough system will continue to cause cloudiness with showers, mainly over the southern half of the Lesser Antilles during the next 24 hours. Light winds are expected to persist across the Eastern Caribbean region during the forecast period. And this was your weather report as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talamba.
This has been RCI's Weather News. For more information, call the Weather Hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
St. Lucia, create it with Island Style Bathroom Bonanza. Bundle and save from vanities to toilets, shower sets to vanities. Gear them up, triple them up, or buy five or more for 10, 12, and 15% off.
Do something to talk about.
The more you buy, the more you save. Get discounts on selected items like faucets, LED mirrors, cleaners, and more. What more? Bathroom bliss? Giving you a special introductory offer on toilets starting as low as $240. Island Style Bathroom Bonanza is on at our Castries, Wardney Bay, and Viewfort stores. Call or visit us today.
And welcome back to the lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. Of course, we are about 24 minutes to the hour of 2 o'clock, and we're going to head to the phone lines to try to take in some calls. Hopefully we can get one in. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
Good afternoon.
Hi, caller.
I just noticed today that sargassum seaweed has been washed up on the Vigi Beach.
Yes.
Normally we tend to see it on the East Coast. So I hope it's not a trend, you know, and it's just a one-off occurrence because most of our tourism plant is on the West Coast.
Yes, it's generally we've been seeing it primarily on the East Coast. That is very true. But I think I do recall at least one time before that when we got quite a bit up at Pigeon Point. Oh, I think looks like we lost that call up, but thanks for bringing that point up. We did want to make a mention of it somewhere in the program. But certainly one began noticing over the weekend. In fact, I think I noticed a pilot had posted an image of sargassum plumes over the on the west coast in near the Soufre area, and then I did notice on the Monday that it was already looking like it was going to be coming in to the it was already in the Shock Bay, and so yes, by Tuesday, the beach, in fact, has already been impacted with sargassum. Of course, let us hope that it can be cleaned out, because as has been rightfully pointed out by that caller, VG Beach in particular is very popular for cruise passengers. And of course, the population of Castries who enjoy going out, and they were in full force, no doubt, over the long weekend, enjoying it, and then in came the seaweed on Tuesday, and so of course those who tend to be using it during the week, especially a number of visitors brought across there on these train excursions and and the like, and also a lot of tourists actually walk to the beach from the port. And so certainly that cleanup is quite a big undertaking, and perhaps the work of the National Conservation Authority to see what can be done in this regard is going to be very much necessary. There was also, I noticed when I saw it from the distance, that the fishers were already looking to make good of the opportunity, because there are some of those fish species, the likes of kawang, which in fact do like the presence of the sargassum. So definitely we hope that that matter can see some resolve. But coming back to the budget for 2025-2026, as I mentioned, quite a lot to, in fact, unpack. It was not merely a budget of projects, and in fact, a lot of projects were mentioned by the Prime Minister and Minister for Finance. The matter of the Julian R. Hunt Highway development was brought forward. Again, mention of St. Jude Hospital, in fact, definitely being completed this year, that guarantee being offered by the government. Mention of a number of public sector investments to support a range of different things in terms of road development. As I mentioned, the Julian Hunt Highway redevelopment project, the dualizing of that highway from Shock up to Groseley, effectively a continuation of something that has been long standing, because we've been since back around 2001 when there were studies done on that corridor to inform what should have happened. And we saw the first part of it being done in the lead up to the Cricket World Cup of 2007, somewhere around 2005, 2006, work was happening on that 2.5-kilometer section between VG and Shock. And it has certainly helped a fair bit in terms of traffic flow along that link, albeit, of course, some still have challenges with respect to the width of the lanes, especially when you've got large vehicles. But the section north from Shock up to Groseley has been long overdue. And the government pushing ahead this year. The point being made as well by the Prime Minister that due to the cancelling of the financial arrangements with the development partners who were going to finance that road, namely the Kuwaiti Fund for Arab Economic Development, as well as the OPEC Fund, that they had already approved those projects, funding the project. And then you saw that those loans were cancelled by the former administration when they got into power somewhere around 2016. And he was making the point that this, in fact, impacts when you have these types of situations, these credit facilities then have to wonder. When you come back to them, they'd be like, okay, there's a bit of risk here. What, you know, if you're going to give you the money now, then are we really going to see this project come through? Are we really going to, are we going to be in another situation of if there's some sort of change in government, that the project would change again or be canceled again? So it impacts your risk, your risk profile. And he was making a point that, of course, it meant that it you then had more time required to build that confidence and renegotiate on those loans. And so that is one of those ongoing projects. He also mentioned the need for the upgrade of the Viesikui Norbert Road, which, of course, is a pretty vital link road for all those who live in the north and who know how traffic can be. Perhaps it's not so bad right now as school is out, but once it's back, we will be seeing the crawl that is experienced along the Castries-Groseley Highway. And so, of course, those back roads, as they are quite often called, including that Vesicui Road, is going to be receiving attention as well in the lead up to that project. A number of initiatives to support the police. He made mention of a progressing on a new police headquarters for the Royal St. Lucia Police Force. Of course, that one is, again, another one along and coming. We saw back in somewhere around 2020 or thereabouts, that demolition work going on the and the whole police headquarters and Royal Jail area. And we saw the Royal Jail being demolished. That, of course, that was against a court order that was going in place with the St. Lucia National Trust and the government at the time, as well as what was the police barracks that got demolished as well. So really, the police have not are not operating with a suitable enough accommodation for the headquarters. We've seen, of course, they're scattered in many different locations around the city, and the need to perhaps do some consolidation to improve on the functionality and efficiency of the police central command is part of that. Another matter that has been longstanding in St. Lucia has been that of a headquarters for the St. Lucia Fire Service. And you'd recall, was it around 2008 or thereabouts, the building that was housing the St. Lucia Fire Service and the Central Police Station, that was damaged in an earthquake, and that building had to be demolished. And since then, the fire service have not actually had a home of their own, which they own. It's been in a rented premises for quite some time, and so efforts there as well by the government to, in fact, get a new fire headquarters for the island. And of course, that's in keeping with some of the other interventions ongoing right now with respect to improvements within the St. Lucia Fire Service. Of course, in that entity is not just about putting out fires, but they also handle emergency response, disaster response to a good degree, first responders, and of course, the ambulance service. So it's really important in that regard that they do have good and proper premises in that regard, especially given the fact that all the other towns have pretty relatively new facilities that were built not so long ago in Babuno, in Groseley, in Miku, in Denry, in Viewfort as well. So also making mention of a substation, a fire service substation on the west coast to be able to provide coverage for the communities of Ancillary and Canneries. There, of course, was mention of a number of other public investment projects. Brand St. Lucia was one of them. The proposal by Invest St. Lucia and the St. Lucia Tourism Authority and Export St. Lucia to all come into one building along the Point Serafin Road was one of the investments for the city of Castries. Also another building, a complex of buildings going up with respect to the Halls of Justice, an indication there by the Prime Minister that the location has changed so as to protect the interest of the Minor Basilica of the Immaculate Conception as an iconic building within the city of Castries. And so redesign work ongoing on that project. Mention also being made of additional new buildings for both Viefo and Soufre, to, in fact, improve the government presence in those towns. providing a home for a number of different services that are provided for in those respective towns. In the case of the VA4 Administrative Center, you'd recall that one being very controversial. That was supposed to have happened. It was started off by the Kenny Anthony administration. And when we saw the Shastney administration come in, that project also got canceled. And so it's seeing a revival in this current financial year with the intention of also including a theater space for the community or the south of the island. And of course, that is very, very important because as it stands right now, there is in fact no real cultural center in VA4 or, well, for that matter, in Labri or in Miku. And so the need for that cultural space for the south as well is certainly pretty pretty important. Let's take in a call at this time. I think I see the lights are blinking, and we'll head to the phone lines. Good afternoon, and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, caller. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Your long weekend was good?
My long weekend, yes, it was, actually. It wasn't bad at all.
Okay, now before I go on the project, isn't the aquatics part of Karifta?
Yes. Yes, it is. There's I don't know if it's called Karifta Aquatics, but there is an aquatics aspect to it. Yes.
Yeah.
And okay. I think I was told that we were doing pretty well in it as well.
Yeah, this morning, I listened to the Score, which is a sports news every morning, and they acquired like 13 medals. One child, I think Sophia Park, she got 3 gold medals, a silver and a bronze. So she, I think she got 5 in all.
Wow.
And then I think the Dorville got bronze, and then there was the relay team. So in all, they accumulated like 13 medals.
Yes,
And then our track and field, as they said, it was
we got
four of them.
Yeah, we got 4 medals in track.
Yeah,
two from JD,
And Charlemagne and Jules.
Yes.
Charlemagne got a bronze and Jules got a silver.
Was it Charlemagne or was it Snack?
Snack, I mean.
Yes.
That's why Charlemagne, but not Jules.
Yes, that's correct.
I find that was quite, the only sad thing is that the boys did not perform that well.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm with some, all of it came mostly from the girls because I really, between the boys and they were nowhere close to the other boys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I was quite happy for them, and I think they have put the aquatic the swimming is in Saint Lucia in 2000, I think, 27.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it will be taking place.
Also, the swimming is going to be in Saint Lucia in 2027.
Yes, that's it. But the minister said by that time the
work has commenced on the new National Aquatic Center
at
Beauséjour, and that involves the construction of a 50-meter Olympic-sized swimming pool.
But the background was the background for that from since 2015. I don't know why work never even started
so,
on that.
So, right, well, remember, caller, they had started, I think it was in a different location, actually, as well. They were originally doing it
on the
eastern side, and then... not too sure why that project was stopped as well, but that is something that is in train in terms of
and then also there was also this race in Jamaica, 100 meters and whatever, and there is this person from Saint Lucia, and that's the first name I'm hearing of her. She's whatever Bell, her surname is Bell, but she was taking part in some race, where there's some of the top athletes from in Jamaica.
Okay.
I think she, but to me, this is the first time I've heard that name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm supposed, but I'm quite happy to hear when the Prime Minister said that he's going to meet with JD's parents, mm-hmm. her coach, and really give all the support she needs to push her and everything. So I'm quite happy. And the second note I said, I did listen to the budget last night, the appropriation bill, and I was quite satisfied with a lot of what I heard. Mm-hmm. Like the former government is saying, well, they will be coming in to right the wrongs. But I think a lot of the wrongs last night was met, because one of the things, I was quite happy with the fact that the nurses warned up to the fourth year that they would be supported.
Right.
And that instead of contract, they would be permanent once everything is well. Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. Also, public servants, in, I think daily paid workers, monthly paid workers.
Some people on wages, who've been on wages for a very, very long time.
Yeah, and they still have not been permanent. So yes. I'm so happy that all of them. How many? He named a large number of them.
I think he said 1,900. Which is quite a large number of individuals. And I mean, it's a big game changer for their finances, because what that means is that they can now go out and, you know, get a loan.
Uncertainty.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah, you live in uncertainty. You cannot face a bank. You cannot face different places. So I'm happy about all of that. The gas price, putting a cap on it, and all the different infrastructural work, I mean, the work on the airport that will be, I think, commencing soon. And unless there was a beginning time frame, a commencement date for all the different work, so you have an idea of what is going to be happening. Mm-hmm. I thought there was so much that was offered. And I think I suppose most of the prime ministers, ministers and the people around there, I suppose they're quite, they know what they're about. You know, so I suppose most of this will work out. So I was quite happy, but I know, you know, it will be looked at as by the opposition as some kind of gimmick for election.
We'll always get that one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that argument maybe this is not going to ever be realized, and that it's just for an election budget.
Yes.
Of course, the opposition will always have to forward with that one.
Prime Minister Solomon that plays games. What he says he's going to do, he does. He doesn't play game with anything that he's doing.
But I think with a lot of the things that he mentioned, they were things that are practical, you know,
very, very practical.
For example, even with respect to and of course you can never please everybody, no doubt, but with respect to the fuel prices, he did put a cap, right? So I guess it could be $16 and lower, depending on the import cost. But he didn't, you know, say, well, we're going to be bringing it down to $12 or something outrageous.
No, he didn't say any of that.
It was very, very measured in that regard. The matter of, for example, the teachers and the temporary teachers
They're going to be paid in August.
Who are going to get their full August salary?
And all sorts of things,
Which, of course, I think he certainly tackled a lot of long-standing matters.
Yes, lots of it.
Right, that were nagging and you know things that we just needed to get done. Which would free up a lot of people. So I think,
I guess I have my friend who owns her own private preschool in Grosley.
Right.
Because, I mean, last year she got her call to come down to the ministry as a owner. And she was rather, because she heard it when he said it last day in the thing, but when they actually
called her.
To get her 2,500.
Yeah, he's increasing it to 3,000 this year.
Wow!
And in addition to that, last year, from what we remember, he provided $50
for preschoolers.
$50 for one term, I think it was right. $50 every month for one term, and he's now increasing that to $100 is it $100 per term or $100
per term, you know?
But for every term, something to that effect.
Some preschools, they pay by the month.
Yeah.
But the more expensive preschools, I think they pay
by the month.
Like Montessori is by the term. I know it's by the term because I taught Montessori. And another thing was the CXC.
Exactly.
They were already math and
so they were getting math and English, and now you're getting four subjects in total.
Yes.
So that's a significant savings. Like, that's like about
either be a science or a foreign language.
Right, right. And yes. I think you can understand why, too, because...
Yes, yes. Yeah. My sister's
well, I think what it was no, what it was is that one of them you can get four now, math, English.
Yes.
The third one should be you should have at least one science or foreign language in the other two. So you could do a science, you could do a foreign language, or you could do a science and something else like accounts or a foreign language and you know. I don't know.
I think it's important that our children have a foreign language, you know, because sometimes they have.
Now, you know, Carla, it's interesting that you said so because I was just reading some comments and somebody was criticizing the need for the foreign language as though, in today's world, everybody is, you have Google Translate and you have AI, so you don't need to learn a foreign language. And I thought to myself, really?
No, you still really? Need to learn a foreign language.
I mean, do you know how many languages the average European speaks and people around the world? I mean, there's so many in Asia right now. They're you know, doing everything that they can do to ensure that their children can speak English and speak.
My niece that lives in Burkina Faso, her son is American. He just turned 6 years old, and I think that when they moved to Burkina Faso last year, and do you know now he is fluent in French because that's the language of Burkina Faso.
Yes.
He is so fluent in French, and he's American, but he got him into the school for as soon as they got in, and he's even better than her.
I did note somebody making the point on Facebook that we should, his view is that we should make French mandatory.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting one. And his thing was that he thinks that it would help in terms of Creole as well. That's what his thinking was. I mean, some people will argue there's Creole and there's French, but it is something to think about. In Canada, for example, they have these what they call French immersion programs. So even though you're living in a an English speaking area, you know, you can go to a French school and all your subjects are in French, which would help you to be fluent in French. So
in the United States, they offer that the children. When my granddaughter goes to that the school, she had to learn one of the languages.
Yes.
I think she chose which one. I think she chose what did you call the language? The Taiwanese you and speak again.
Mandarin.
Yes. Oh yes. Because it's very interesting.
Yeah.
But the
thing about the immersion program, you're not only just doing the foreign language as one subject, you're actually learning all your other subjects in that language as well. So it's almost you've got to be able to be fluent in it, you know. So.
Yeah, and because if you're trying to get a fighting chance in that world, you have to offer them all of these things.
Yes.
That's well in our youth.
And I think you saw a lot of emphasis in the budget on education.
Yes, very much.
I think one of the things that probably were not even fully appreciated, I don't know if you heard that one about the child allowance, which is
I heard that one.
A big deal.
Because
right now your child allowance is like $1,000, right? Yeah. And I think it's $1,000 up to 10 years and then 2 years, 10 years and above. It's 2,000.
Yes.
And he's in fact shifted it from that amount to 5,000 per child. So you can now actually, I mean, that's a huge help.
It is. And even the nurses, do the 2,005, the 5,000, the fourth year is 10,000.
Oh, yes. Certainly. The provision for nurses is really
that was offered.
Really good.
Yes.
Nursing students, we should say. Nursing students. Yeah.
Yes, after 2 years. There's a lot that was offered, and I'm just hoping that all of it has come to fruition once they have the right people in place that are moving, you know.
Carla, because implementation is so critical in this entire
and
matter.
And even the price of food, because I think I spoke to the in Chamber of Commerce or whatever them to like in the food like the how they call it is cheese.
Right.
Butter, all of these things. It's quite a little just a little bit expensive sometimes.
Yes.
I think for people the intake of those things, I mean will appreciate that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I do not so much take too much of those things.
Yeah. Well, you hear about, I mean, you hear the opposition speaking quite a bit about food prices, right? That you've been hearing about the cost of living.
And these are all of the wrongs they were talking.
And it's interesting
about
that they're saying so, because then the government took the decision to go ahead with the minimum wage, right?
Yes.
Which was not even around. I mean, you literally had some people who probably were making sometimes $500 a month.
Yes.
And then, you know, and then you're seeing that, okay, so you now have a minimum wage of $11.36. And interestingly enough, then the opposition that did not introduce any minimum wage at that time.
Yeah, and then NIC, the NIC pensioners like myself, they put out to get an increase in July. And this has been the only government that has ever given NIC people increase. You know, it started with Dr. Kenny Anthony, and he went like every year, and then you find out Philip J.P. Continue, because they are the only ones, and anybody who's getting NIC would tell you that that's the only government that have ever started with Dr. Kenny Anthony raising in, the NIC pensioners and all of these things.
Right.
So I think everybody that's listening, because you have people that are calling and telling you, boy, you know, everybody got a piece out of what he was offering. Guy, I was just quite happy with it.
Yeah.
Because I listen to the opposition sometimes. Because I think I listened to Marcella Johnson some time ago on a Thursday morning.
Okay.
She was there. And when they asked her, okay, what do you propose to do when you become a minister, because that's how assured they were that they were going to win. And her thing was that, we're going to form councils, and then the councils will take it from there, and then the council will do about. And it was like she never actually said what it is she was going to do. She was, everything was left on council back. Not her ideas, just everything was going to be left in the council. Like the council would be responsible for doing that, and the council would be break the you know, so I said, but well, what are you offering? She was nothing, she was offering.
Right.
She listened to, what's her name? The other one, from Library. She came in and it's the same thing. And I'm saying,
Laura Shapier, are you referring to?
Yes. Here is a woman that is saying to women that are getting finance from the men that they have children, is saying to women, if the men are going to put 200 down, you, the woman, have to put your 200 down to match it. And I'm saying, but hey, how are you can tell a woman? Most of the women that go to that courthouse or wherever to collect that $200 or $250, these are women that really cannot afford. These are women that are in low-paid jobs, people that maybe working at S&S and all. These are the young women in the city. Sometimes the salary they're getting is not that much. So they look forward to going to these places to collect the. And you're saying to them that they have to put the $200 down.
Mm-hmm.
You say, but how are you thinking? And then you afterwards are saying that there are so many young women that are not working. That the children, fathers are in jail, the grandmothers are out there helping, have to actually steal. So, but it is, you're talking from two sides of your mouth, because you're telling them put 200, and then on the other hand, you're saying that they don't have enough money, the guys don't have money to give them, and all sorts of things.
Right. So, well, I mean, that's we'll have to continue that conversation, caller, about that one. But definitely, I think we should all be glad that the aspect regarding the children. And support for children is a big deal, because I think what it would then mean is that above your $25,000 personal allowance, which was, remember, it moved from 18 to 25, but now for parents, they can now claim, if you've got one child or two children or three children, you can now actually claim a lot more and enjoy a lot more of that cap. So that's really important for a lot of working mothers, a lot of single mothers. You know, that's a big deal, definitely.
There are lots of them, and I'm just quite happy with what was said last night. I'm hoping tomorrow when they have the debate, I'm just to hear what like every parliamentarian has to offer his. Well, I'm waiting personally to hear what my rep is offering.
That's Mr. Stevenson King.
Yeah, because there is this massive.
Caller, we're gonna have to continue that tomorrow. Then I hope you can call back, because we're over time. Right. Sorry about that.
Bye.
Take care. Cheers. Bye-bye. And, of course, we'll be back again tomorrow for another program. Hope you can join us for that. Take care. Bye-bye.